3. The Black Mass. Our Father, which wert in heaven. Satanist prayer. The Mass is the central ceremony of the Catholic Church, founded by Christ himself and reverenced by his followers for hundreds of years. The Protestant communion services are based on it, though they differ from it in some important ways. Because of its divine origin and its long tradition of sanctity, the Mass has been frequently copied, not always with blasphemous intent. Alchemists wrote alchemical versions of it. Aleister Crowley wrote his own Mass of the Gnostic Catholic Church, and also a Mass of the Phoenix, to be said by the magician daily at sunset. The ceremonial of the Hitler Youth meetings closely resembled the form of the Christian service, with a Nazi flag taking the honored place of the sacrament, and quotations from Mein Kampf or from Hitler's speeches replacing the Christian gospel, epistle, and creed. As early as the 2nd century A.D., Saint Irenaeus accused the Gnostic teacher Marcus, an adept in magical impostures, of what seems to have been a perversion of the Mass to the worship of a deity other than the Christian God. He pretended to consecrate cups of wine, quote, protracting to great length the word of invocation, he contrives to give them a purple and reddish color, so that Charis, grace, a name of the divine thought, who is one of those that are superior to all things, should be thought to drop her own blood into that cup, through means of his invocation, and that those who are present should be led to rejoice to taste of that cup, in order that, by so doing, the Charis who is set forth by the magician may also flow into them. Unquote. Occultists, ancient and modern, Christian and non-Christian, have generally accepted that the Mass is a magic ritual of great power. High Mass, Cyril Scott says, is a form of ceremonial magic which has a very definite effect on the inner planes. It is a channel through which the Master Jesus and the World Teacher can pour their spiritual power. This high regard for the Mass springs from the fact that the ceremony itself appears to be a magical one. It achieves a magical result through magical methods. Ordinary physical things, the bread and the wine, are changed into the divine, and the worshipper consumes the divine to become one with God. The transformation of the bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ depends on the magical use of language, the speaking of words charged with force. The transformation, according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, is produced in virtue of the words of consecration, pronounced by the priest, assuming the person of Christ, and using the same ceremonies that Christ used at the Last Supper. These words are in Latin, hoc est enim corpus meum, for this is my body, and hic est enim calix sanguinis mei, for this is the chalice of my blood. Certain accompanying actions are necessary. The words must be spoken by an ordained priest, and if he spoke them in his own person, instead of in the person of Christ, they would not be effective. Nor are they the words spoken by Jesus himself, who did not speak Latin. But from the magician's point of view, their use through the centuries has given them effective magical force. That Catholics take a similar view is suggested by the vote of the Ecumenical Council in 1963 to authorize the saying of Mass in the vernacular, provided that the Latin is retained for the precise verbal formula which is essential to the sacrament. The occult importance of the Mass has been heightened by the fact that Roman Catholics themselves have turned it to all kinds of magical uses. The Gelation Sacramentary, which contains Roman documents of about the 6th century, includes masses said to bring good weather, to bring rain, to obtain children, for the protection of someone going on a journey, to ward off diseases of cattle, for a sick person, or to recommend the dead to God's mercy. In 858, Pope Nicholas I condemned the Mass of Judgment, intended to clear or convict a man accused of a crime. The priest would give him communion, saying, "May this body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ prove thee innocent or guilty this day." Saying Mass over cattle or farm tools or fishing boats to bless them and make them productive was common in the Middle Ages and is still practiced today. The superstitious use of the Mass and of objects which were holy because they were blessed by a priest and were used in the Mass or in other church services, especially the consecrated host which was the body of God, sometimes went to remarkable lengths. In the 16th century, the demonologist John Weyer described how a German priest said Mass on the belly of a young nun to cure her of bewitchment. A Dominican tried to expel a demon from a little girl by touching her throat with a vessel full of hosts, and attempted to drive a devil out of a possessed cow by burying in the cow's pasture a piece of a stole which had been worn by a priest saying Mass. Weyer also mentioned a contemporary method of catching a vampire. Earth from the first three spadefuls of soil thrown into a grave was taken and consecrated by a priest in the Mass and was then trodden under the threshold of the church. If a vampire was in the church, she could not get out because she could not cross this consecrated barrier. The implication of practices like these was that the Mass contained inherent force which could be put to many uses. This implication was strengthened by Catholic insistence that a priest could say Mass effectively, even if he was in a state of sin, because he did not say it in his own person, but in the person of Christ. The ceremony and the objects connected with it seem to have a magical power of their own, regardless of the spiritual condition of those who used them or the purposes for which they were used. From the use of the Mass in white magic came its use in black magic. The Council of Toledo in 694 condemned priests who said Mass for the dead, naming not a dead man, but a living victim whom it was intended to kill. The solemn chant of Requiem aeternam dona ei Domine, give him eternal rest, O Lord, was meant to turn the Mass into a death blow. The council ruled that the offending priest and the person who had paid him should both be punished with banishment. Giraldus Cambrensis, who died about 1220, said that some priests in his day would sing Mass for the dead against an enemy 10 times, in the hope that he would die on the 10th day or soon after. Other priests would say Mass over a wax image of the victim placed on the altar, cursing him. In 1500 there was a quarrel between the Bishop of Cambrai and his cathedral chapter. The hostile dean and canons took to including in the Mass a collection of threatening and denunciatory passages from the Old Testament, which were recited by the priest with his back to the altar, the choir singing responses. The bishop appealed to the University of Paris, which ruled that this was a form of incantation against him. It was not always easy to distinguish black magic from white. The Roman witch judge, Paulus Grillandus, writing about 1525, says that it is probably not heretical to say Mass with the intention of finding out whether one person loves another, because this is an appeal to God for knowledge which God has. If Mass is said to provoke love in another, it is probably not heretical, because God commands us to love others. But if in either case Mass is said to enlist the help of the devil, then it is heretical. He tells a story about a Spanish priest in Rome who composed various prayers, asking God to turn the hearts of 4 nuns so that they would submit to him in love. The priest paid several ignorant monks to include these prayers in the Mass. It was considered a minor sin, and he was punished by temporary banishment from Rome. Grillandus also says that it is criminal, though not heretical, to say Mass for the dead against the living, and that priests who consecrate the host for use in sorcery should be punished as sorcerers. In a long ritual for summoning the spirits of darkness, the Grimoire of Honorius relies heavily on the Mass to strengthen the magician's powers and protect him. The magician, who must presumably be an ordained priest, says a Mass of the Holy Ghost in the middle of the night on the first Monday of the month. This is the Mass for Pentecost, when the disciples received the gift of speaking in tongues and was perhaps selected to give the magician inspired speech. After he has consecrated the host, he holds it in his left hand, kneels, and prays to Christ for help. Give to thine unworthy servant, holding thy living body in his hands, the strength to use that power which is entrusted to him against the rebellious spirits. When the sun rises, he takes a black cock, kills it, and rips out its eyes, heart, and tongue, which are dried in the sun and ground to powder. The rest of the carcass is buried in a secret place. On the next day, at dawn, the magician chants a mass of the angels, which belongs to the feast of the apparition of St. Michael, the great opponent of Satan, and which therefore strengthens the magician's defenses. On the altar, he has one of the black cock's feathers. He sharpens it, dips it in the consecrated wine, and writes certain magic characters on paper, which he presumably keeps about him for protection. He also keeps part of the consecrated host, wrapping it in violet silk. 2 days later, at midnight, he lights a candle of yellow wax, made in the form of a cross, and recites Psalm 78, "Give ear, O my people, to my law." Then he says Mass for the dead, calling on God to free him from the fear of hell and to make the demons obedient to him. He extinguishes the candle, and at sunrise cuts the throat of a young male lamb. The skin of the lamb, on which the powdered organs of the cock are rubbed, is used to make parchment. The carcass is buried with prayers in which the magician identifies the slaughtered lamb with Christ. "Sacrificed lamb, be thou a pillar of strength against the demons. Slain lamb, give me power over the powers of darkness. Sacrificed lamb, give me strength to subdue the rebellious spirits. So be it." After drawing complicated magic signs on the parchment and reciting psalms, the magician finally says another Mass for the dead, in which he chants 72 great names of power, and then proceeds to the incantation for summoning the spirits to appear. The mixture of piety and sorcery seems extraordinary, but to the writer of the grimoire, all these preliminary processes were sources of power which he could turn to his own purposes. The Mass and the host were used in every kind of sorcery. Priests were constantly ordered to keep the hosts, wine, and sacred vessels securely locked up to prevent them from being stolen for use in magic or the making of poisons, and thefts of communion wafers have continued to trouble churches to this day. The Malleus Maleficarum says that witches, quote, "make their instruments of witchcraft by means of the sacraments or sacramental things of the church or some holy thing consecrated to God, and they sometimes place a waxen image under the altar cloth or draw a thread through the holy chrism, oil, or use some other consecrated thing in such a way," unquote. Not only did sacred things carry magical force, but the abuse of them was also a source of power. Quote, "And there are some who, in order to accomplish their evil charms and spells, beat and stab the crucifix, and utter the filthiest words against the purity of the most glorious Virgin Mary, casting the foulest aspersions on the nativity of our Savior from her inviolate womb." Unquote. The perverse excitement of acts of blasphemy generated its own currents of force, and sacrilege became one of the essential features of the Black Mass. When it was known that the Mass was sometimes turned to black magical purposes, it was natural to assume that witches and sorcerers used it in the devil's service, and perhaps they did. A witch tried in southern France in 1594 described the saying of Mass at a Sabbath held on St. John's Eve in a field with about 60 people present. The celebrant wore a black cope with no cross on it and had two women as servers. When the host should have been elevated after the consecration, he held up a slice of turnip stained black, and all cried, "Master, help us." Louis Gaufridi, strangled and burned for bewitching Madeleine de Mandel and another nun of Aix, confessed in 1611 that as prince of the synagogue, Lucifer's lieutenant, he had celebrated Mass at the Sabbath, sprinkling the witches with a consecrated wine, at which they cried out, "Sanguis eius super nos et filios nostros." His blood be upon us and upon our children. There were tales of masses said with black hosts and black chalices, of mocking screams of Beelzebub, Beelzebub at the consecration. The wine might be water or urine. The host was triangular or hexagonal, generally black, but sometimes blood red. The priest wore a chasuble, the sleeveless outer robe of the priest saying Mass, which might be brown and embroidered with the figures of a pig and a naked woman, or bright scarlet with a green inset showing a bear and a weasel devouring the host, or deep red with a triangle on the back, in which was a black goat with silver horns. The goat himself might say Mass, reading from a missal with red, white, and black pages bound in wolfskin. According to Pierre de Lanque, the devil said Mass, leaving out the Confiteor, or Confession of Sins, and the Alleluia. He would mumble words from the Mass until he came to the offertory, the point in the service at which the collection is taken up. His worshippers presented him with offerings of bread, eggs, and money. Then the devil preached them a sermon, and afterwards held up a black host which had his symbol impressed on it instead of the symbol of Christ. He said, "This is my body," and elevated the host by impaling it on one of his horns, at which they all cried out, "Aquera goiti, aquera beiti, aquera goiti, aquera beiti." The goat above, the goat below. The goat above, the goat below. They formed a cross or a semicircle around the altar and prostrated themselves on the ground. Each was given a piece of the host to swallow and two mouthfuls of an infernal medicine and brew of so foul a flavor and smell that they sweated to swallow it and so cold that it froze them. After this, the devil coupled with them and the frenzied orgy began. The witch's mass was evidently not only a parody of the Christian service, but also an adaptation of it to the worship of their own god. The black host bearing the devil's symbol was mystically his flesh, "This is my body," and when he elevated it, they cried out in adoration of him. The witches seem to have preserved the old custom of communion in both kinds, the worshippers receiving the wine as well as the bread, which had been abandoned by the Catholics and was later restored by Protestants. They would leave out the confession of sins because they defied the Christian notion of sin, and the Alleluia because it was a shout of praise to the Christian God. They became one with their master through the communion of his body and blood, and then in sexual union with him, but they probably also felt a fierce sacrilegious thrill in violating the Christian ceremony, which added to the excitement of the orgy. The same perverse mingling of sacrilege and sensuality is found in the confession of Madeleine Bavon, a nun of Louviers in Normandy. It is impossible to say how much of her autobiography, written in prison, is true, and she herself asked her readers to try to distinguish between the real and the hallucinatory in it. She entered the convent at Louviers when she was 18, in 1625, after she had been seduced by a priest. The chaplain of the convent at this time was Father Pierre David, who believed that God should be worshipped naked in the fashion of Adam, that a believer filled with the Holy Spirit was incapable of sin, and that any act was virtuous if performed in a state of inner devotion. As a sign of humility and poverty, the nuns attended Mass stripped to the skin, and those who were considered holiest, according to Madeleine, were the nuns who went completely naked in church and in the gardens and danced naked before Father David. She herself was forced to take communion bare-breasted, and the chaplain caressed her indecently. He also taught the nuns to fondle each other while he looked on and to use an artificial phallus. In 1628, Father Mathurin Picard became chaplain with Father Thomas Boulet as his assistant. They apparently carried Father David's practices to the lengths of positive Satanism. Picard raped Madeleine and other nuns committed the most filthy acts with him. Once or twice a week, Madeleine would fall into a kind of trance or ecstasy, in which he went to witch meetings at a house near the convent with Picard, Boulet, and other priests, three or four of the nuns, and a few outsiders. Some of them seem to have worn grotesque animal costumes. The meetings were held in a long, narrow room with an altar on which were candles. The priests recited Mass using a blood-red host and reading from a blasphemous book full of maledictions against Christianity. The worshippers feasted twice on roasted human flesh, and afterwards there was a frenzied orgy in which the women submitted to the priests and also, after Father David's death, to his ghost. The Satanist hatred of Christianity was given full rein. Consecrated hosts were burned, and the consecrated wine poured contemptuously on the floor. A small crucifix was brought in at one meeting, hosts were nailed to the figure of Christ, and the congregation stabbed at the hosts with knives. Once one of the women brought her own newborn child, which was crucified alive on a wooden cross, the hands and feet fastened to the cross with nails stuck through consecrated hosts. These meetings continued till 1642, when Picard died, and many of the nuns were seized with hysterical paroxysms and convulsions, which were put down to diabolical possession. After long investigations, Boulet was burned alive in 1647. With him was burned the corpse of Picard, which had been exhumed for the purpose. Madeleine Bavon died in prison the same year at the age of 40, after several times trying to commit suicide. 30 years later came a fresh outbreak of Satanism in France. Between 1673 and 1680, at least 50 priests were executed for sacrilege, and others were imprisoned. Father Davout was convicted of saying the Black Mass over the naked body of a woman, and also of using the Mass in sorcery by placing under the altar cloth papers bearing the names of those who was hoped either to attract in love or to kill. Father Tournay was convicted of saying Mass on the body of a young girl whom he had made pregnant, with the intention that she would miscarry. She died of fright. Father Le Mignon was imprisoned for life, accused of slaughtering 2 children and hacking them to pieces during the celebration of Mass. He also said a Mass to discover buried treasure. Father Coton had baptized a child in holy oil, strangled him, and offered his corpse as a sacrifice to the devil. Father Gérard was convicted of using a girl's body as his altar in saying Mass and copulating with her as part of the ceremony. Many of the sacrilegious priests were arrested as a result of the activities of a special court set up by Louis XIV in 1679 to deal with cases of poisoning involving some of the French nobility. The court's sessions were secret, and from its verdict there was no appeal. Meeting in a room hung entirely in black and lit with candles, it was called the Chambre Ardente, or Burning Court. Its investigation, headed by Nicolas de la Rémy, police commissioner of Paris, rapidly extended from poisoning into sorcery. The most skeptical modern writers have conceded a strong element of truth in de la Rémy's reports. The investigation centered round a widow named Catherine de Haye, known as La Voisin, a fortune-teller and suspected abortionist. It became clear that La Voisin had catered to ladies of high rank as a supplier of poisons, charms, and black magical ceremonies. When her house was searched, a curious chapel was discovered. Its walls were draped in black, and behind the altar was a black curtain with a white cross embroidered on it. A mattress rested on the altar, covered by a black cloth, and on top of this were black candles. A furnace was found in which, apparently, the bodies of children sacrificed in the Black Mass had been destroyed. There were magical books and candles made with human fat, supplied by a public executioner who was one of La Voisin's lovers. La Voisin was burned alive in February 1680, and in October the king suspended the sittings of the burning court, probably because his mistress, Madame de Montespan, had been implicated. But de la Rémy continued his inquiries in secret, on the king's instructions, until June 1682. The beautiful and fascinating Françoise Athénaïs, Marquise de Montespan, born in 1641, had become a lady-in-waiting to the queen and had attracted the interest of Louis XIV by 1667, when she first consulted La Voisin. She wanted to alienate the king from both the queen and his current love, the Duchesse de La Vallière, to make herself his mistress and ultimately his wife. La Voisin obtained a priest, Father Mariette, who said a Mass to assist de Montespan in her ambitions. While she knelt, the gospel was read over her bowed head, and an incantation chanted, quote, "That the queen may be barren, that the king leave her bed and board for me, that he give me everything I ask for myself and my relatives, that, his affection being redoubled on what has existed in the past, the king may leave La Vallière and look upon her no more, and that, the queen being repudiated, I may marry the king," unquote. The same ceremony was repeated twice more, the last time in a church. The hearts of two doves were torn out, placed on the altar, and consecrated in the names of the king and de Montespan. The dove is a bird of passion, sacred both to Christ and to Venus. In the same year, de Montespan became Louis XIV's mistress. She did not feel secure in his affections, and turned again to La Voisin for help. More masses were said, and love charms were placed under the chalice on the altar and blessed by the priest. They contained powder of dried moles, bat's blood, and cantharides. After the service, the favorite took them away and slipped them into the king's food. In 1673, there was a serious threat that de Montespan might be superseded. To meet the crisis, La Voisin called in the sinister and hideous Abbé Guibault. Guibault was in his 60s, a tall, massive old man, disfigured by a squint, blue veins standing out on his bloated, sensual face. He recited three masses in which his altar was de Montespan's naked body, the chalice resting on her belly. At the offering of the elements, the priest cut the throat of a child. The blood was drained into the chalice and mixed with flour to make the host. When this wafer was consecrated, de Montespan herself, or Guibourg in her name, spoke the following incantation. Astaroth, Asmodeus, princes of Amity, I conjure you to accept the sacrifice of this child, which I offer in return for what I ask, that the king and the dauphin will continue their friendship towards me, that I may be honored by the princes and princesses of the court, and that the king will refuse nothing I ask of him, both for my relatives and my retainers. De Montespan took the consecrated wafer and some of the child's blood away with her to place them in the king's food. Still the mistress could not feel safe. And in 1676, in which year there was a riot in Paris over the disappearances of children, Guibault was called in again. The ceremony was repeated three times more in La Voisin's chapel, de Montespan serving as altar on the first occasion, and La Voisin taking her place the second and third times. La Voisin's daughter Marguerite described masses of this type at which she had been present. The woman for whom the mass was said lay naked on the mattress on the altar, at right angles to it, her legs flexed or hanging down over the edge, her head supported on a pillow, her arms stretched out crosswise with black candles on her hands. A napkin bearing a cross was placed on her breasts, and the chalice stood on her belly. A child's throat was cut at the offering of the elements, and the host consecrated over the woman's genitals. As often as the priest was to kiss the altar, according to Marguerite, he kissed the body and consecrated the host above the genitals, into which he inserted a small piece of the host. At the end of the mass, the priest went into Inibat, the woman, and dipping his hands in the chalice, washed her genitals. The ritual failed to take effect, and in 1679, maddened by the king's passion for another woman, de Montespan resorted to death magic. Guibault said a mass for the dead in the name of the king, mouthing incantations against his life. There was no result, and a plot was made to poison the king, which failed when La Voisin was arrested in March 1679. Madame de Montespan was never formally accused, and the king, perhaps anxious to avoid scandal, treated her courteously but distantly till her retirement from court in 1691. She became increasingly pious, devoting herself to austerity and good works, though to the end she feared death and the darkness of night. She died in 1707. Guibault was imprisoned in the castle of Besançon, chained to the wall of his cell for 3 years till his death. Whether Guibault was a conscious Satanist is not clear, though it seems likely. His amatory mass was apparently an attempt to use the magical force of the Orthodox mass to arouse love and desire, not an adoration of Satan. But the black candles, the chapel hung in black, the incantation to the demons Astaroth and Asmodeus, the offering of a slaughtered child in sacrifice to them, the desecration of the sacrament and the mixture of sacredness and sensuality bring the ceremony close to the black mass proper, the turning of the mass to the devil's worship. In 18th and 19th century accounts of the Satanic Mass, orgiastic sacrilege and perversion are carried to a point at which the details become unprintable. The worshippers sexually abusing obscene images of Christ and the Virgin, or large consecrated hosts split up the middle. The priest follows the Catholic rite closely, but substituting Satan for God and evil for good. Parts of the Mass are read backwards, and the Christian prayers are reversed, as in the Satanist version of the Lord's Prayer, quote, "Our Father, which wert in heaven, thy will be done in heaven as it is on earth. Lead us into temptation, and deliver us not from evil," unquote. The purpose is both to degrade the Christian service and to transform it as a ritual of powerful religious and magical force to the glorification of the devil. The same is true of the devil's hosts and wine, said to be made of excreta, menstrual blood or semen, defecated upon or smeared with semen before being crammed into their mouths by the votaries, for the devil is lord of the body as opposed to the soul, of fertility as opposed to spirituality. That the body and blood of the god are products of the human body is also possibly connected with the magical doctrine that man is potentially God. The best authority on Satanist ritual in modern times is J.K. Huysmans. It is not certain that he ever attended a black mass, but probable that, as he claimed, he did. He described it in his novel Là-bas, published in 1891. The hero, Dautal, is taken to a dingy, half-dark chapel in a private house, lit by sanctuary lamps hanging from bronze chandeliers with pink pendants of glass. Above the altar is an infamous derisive Christ, its bestial face twisted into a mean laugh. There are black candles on the altar. For incense they burn rue, myrtle, dried nightshade, henbane, and the powerfully narcotic thorn apple. The acolytes and choristers, robed in red, are homosexuals. The mass is said by an aging and villainous priest, Canon Docle, wearing a dark red chasuble, beneath which he is naked, and a scarlet cap with two horns of red cloth. Docle begins the mass while the choir boys sing the responses and the congregation take the censers and breathe deeply of the intoxicating fumes. Kneeling before the altar, Docle hails Satan as reasonable God, just God, master of slanders, dispenser of the benefits of crime, administrator of luxurious sins and great vices, cordial of the vanquished, suzerain of resentment, accountant of humiliations, and treasurer of old hatreds, hope of virility, king of the disinherited, the son who is to overthrow the inexorable father. He calls upon the devil to grant his followers glory, riches, and power. Then he curses the execrable Jesus, the impostor and breaker of promises, who was to redeem mankind and has not, who was to appear in glory and has not, who was to intercede for man with the Father and has not. He proclaims that in his quality of priest, he will force this do-nothing king and coward God to descend into the host to be punished by the violation of his body. While the worshippers writhe and scream hysterically, Docle consecrates and defiles the host in orgasm and hurls it to the floor. The Satanists claw at it, groveling, tearing off pieces of it, and chewing them. Fascinated and appalled, Dautal watches Docle, who, quote, frothing with rage, was chewing up sacramental wafers, taking them out of his mouth, wiping himself with them, and distributing them to the women, who ground them underfoot, howling, or fell over each other, struggling to get hold of them and violate them, unquote. Then there is an indiscriminate orgy, and Dautal, sickened, creeps away. This description brings out the Satanist conviction, also found in witchcraft, that Christ is a false god, safely ensconced in heaven, where he cares nothing for humanity, with undertones of the old Gnostic belief that God is far away and has no contact with men who are under the rule of the devil. Christianity is a cheat, a quack medicine, and the churches are its hucksters. The original of Canon Docle was Father Louis van Hecker, chaplain of the Holy Blood at Bruges. Huysmans believed that Van Hecke was a Satanist who lured young people into his clutches, corrupted them, and initiated them into the mysteries of black magic. He was said to have crosses tattooed on the soles of his feet, so that he continually trod on the symbol of Christ. Sometimes at night, fear came upon him, and he would scream in panic, recovering himself by lighting all the lamps in the house, yelling diabolical curses, and committing horrible blasphemies upon consecrated hosts. The Abbé Boulin, whom Huysmans admired, also appears in Là-Bas in a sympathetic role as Dr. Johannes. The Black Mass appears more often in fiction than in real life, but there are occasional factual references to it. In 1889, Le Matin carried an account by a reporter who had written an article in which he doubted the existence of the Satanic Mass, but had then been invited to one. He was taken to it with blindfolds on his eyes, and when they were removed, found himself in a dark room with erotic murals. On the altar, surrounded by six black candles, was an image of a goat trampling on a crucifix. The priest wore red robes, and the congregation of about 50 men and women chanted hymns. Mass was said on the bare body of a woman stretched on the altar. Black hosts were consecrated and eaten by the worshippers, and the ceremony culminated in an orgy. Le Matin confirmed that the reporter had really been to this meeting, but would give no further details. In 1895, a satanic chapel was discovered in the Palazzo Borghese in Rome. The walls were hung in black and scarlet, and behind the altar was a tapestry of Lucifer triumphans. On the altar were candles and a figure of Satan. The chapel was luxuriously fitted out with prayer desks and chairs in crimson and gold. It was lit by electricity, glaring down from a huge eye in the ceiling. Writing in 1940, William Seabrook, a collector of occult experiences, said he had seen black masses in London, Paris, Lyon, and New York. The mass is said by an apostate priest with a prostitute in a scarlet robe as his acolyte. A woman, preferably a virgin, lies naked on the altar before an inverted crucifix. The chalice is placed between her breasts, and some of the wine is spilled on her body. After the consecration, the host is not elevated, but debased and defiled. A Spanish writer, Julio Caro Baroja, was told about an occurrence in 1942 in the Spanish Basque country. Six men and three women met at a farm, feasted copiously, and then stripped themselves naked. They heated up a cauldron of soup and boiled a cat alive in it. They drank the soup, reciting incantations between mouthfuls, and one of them made an altar of planks and parodied the saying of Mass using slices of sausage as hosts. Through all this, there was much caressing of the women. In the 1950s, there were reports of black masses in Italy, and in 1963, there were numerous cases of black magic in England. The altar of a church in Sussex had to be rehallowed after four men had been seen performing a mysterious ritual in the church, apparently attempting to summon up evil spirits. A black mass was believed to have been said in the Church of St. Mary's Clophill in Bedfordshire. Apparently necromancy was also involved, as the graves of six women had been opened, and one skeleton was found inside the church. When anyone invokes the devil with intentional ceremonies, said Eliphas Lévy, the devil comes and is seen. But Lévy's devil is not a being existing independently of man, but something called into manifestation by the magician's imagination. There are a few convinced Satanists here and there in the world, but for most modern magicians, the enemy of Christendom cannot exist. According to occult theory, there are forces and intelligences, whether inside or outside the magician, which are conventionally condemned as evil. But a god who is entirely evil is as inconceivable as a god who is entirely good. The true God, the One, is the totality of everything, containing all good and all evil, and reconciling all opposites. To magicians, good and evil go round in a wheel that is one thing and not many. They are two sides of one coin, apparently separate and opposed, but really two aspects of a greater whole. In his attempt to become the whole man, who is God. The magician tries to experience and master all things, whatever their conventional labels. Until he has achieved this by completing the great work, it is presumptuous for the magician to speculate on the truth behind the labels, for, as the serpent pointed out in Eden, the knowledge of good and evil belongs to the divine. Satanism is as harshly rejected by most magicians as it is by Christians. But where the churches, which brought the devil to life in the first place, condemn his worship as the adoration of evil, magicians despise it as a failure to understand the true nature of the universe.